Crab Feast. You know what it's all about.
This is the Crab Feast. I'm yelling, fuck that. You ain't gotta ask me, cause you could trust that. Every Tuesday, you already knew though. Ryan Sickler, soccer star, JUCO. Above ground, cool goes, better than most. Jay Larson, self-diagnosed. Go down low this week, last week. Here we go again, fuck the Crab Feast.
It's the joint.
Little Crab Feast for that ass. Oh, you did like elevator action on me. I hit every one of them. I got them.
I was impressed with myself. I was excited. I was like, oh, I think I hit this one.
It's like you were shooting ducks. Oh, good to touch all those levels of pitches, Jay Larson.
You as well, Sickle Cell. Great to touch that pitch. Hope y'all are touching our pitches out there. Great to be here with you as always. JayLarsonComedy.com, Jay Larson Comedy on social media. I said it last week about the invitation. I just want to let people know in certain cities right now, playing in Brooklyn, Chicago, Cleveland, Columbus, Detroit, Oakland, Omaha, Portland, Salem, Mass., Tucson, Vancouver, Yonkers, all right now playing. The invitation is out right now in your towns. Otherwise, you can get it on video on demand. It's a great movie that I was in. I'm very happy to promote it and very proud of it. And then coming out after the 20th, from like the 20th to the 29th, a bunch of other cities. I've posted it, but just real quick, Sioux Falls, Charlotte, North Carolina, Winnipeg, Asbury Park, New Jersey, Halifax, Champaign, Illinois, Kalamazoo, Lubbock, Texas, New Orleans, Palm Springs, San Antonio, San Diego, St. Louis, Winchester, Virginia, El Paso, Texas, D.C., Oklahoma City, Pittsburgh, Tacoma, a lot of places.
Why don't you, is there a post up on the
I
Crab
have
Feast website?
Not on the Feast website.
Yes, put one
I'll
up on the
up,
Feast
I'll
website.
Put one up on the Feast. Anyway, go check it out, the invitation. You also can see it on demand. Very proud of it. Stand-up wise, May 20th, I'll be in Nashville at Zany's for two shows with Nick Thune, Nate Bargatze, and Rory Scovel. Ryan and I will be at Bridgetown doing a live podcast on June 4th. I'll be doing stand-up on the 2nd and 3rd up there at Bridgetown. And then Dublin coming at you 27th to the 30th of July. And then I'll be in London the 31st to the 2nd of August. So those are me. Sickle Cell, do you.
Ryan Sickler on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, RyanSickler.com. Next stand-up. Crab Feast stand-up show at the Comedy Store is May 3rd. Come on out May 3rd. Lineup is going to be another great one.
They're $5, all going to be fantastic.
They're all going to be stupid. They're all going to be $5. And I'll tell you, I really enjoyed hearing you guys talk about how great you thought the lineup was, and then hanging out on the porch and getting to meet you guys and hearing your favorite stories from the podcast. It's really cool to have that experience if you're here in LA. So thank you, man. You guys are always great, respectable fans. You really are. You're good. You're great.
You make us proud.
Yeah, man. Tonight's live Crab Feast podcast, the Hollywood Improv, had to be canceled. We will have one in May. We'll be getting the info for that, and we'll let you know about that. Tickets for all shows are on RyanSickler.com and thecrabfeast.com. And as always, there were some ladies rocking. Josh Wolf went up and joked around that we had a bunch of bearded dudes, but there were ladies in the second row having Tuesday shirts on. So thank you for buying your merch and rocking that shit proud. We really appreciate it. And the Amazon link, thank you so much. It helps tremendously. Love the feedback from the premium apps. They're all available for iTunes and non-iTunes users. It's all right there on the website. The Facebook fan page, follow us. All your Crab Feast news will be there, just like Jay Larson's movie, The Invitation. You can find information probably there, mm-hmm. I would imagine. iTunes page, your goddamn five-star reviews are the best.
You guys are the best. Great sponsor this week, SeatGeek. If anyone's ever had to buy tickets to a sporting event, SeatGeek is the place to go. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you can save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket price falls. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats, and before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see and view from your seats. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you all the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page, which is something we've always seen when we're, you know, selling tickets for comedy.
Right.
There's always like these hidden fees.
It's like an $8 charge on top of that.
Exactly.
Like,
they're pulling everything into one place for to make it easier for you. Here's our deal. Our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase.
Damn.
Okay? Which is, yeah, it's awesome. Get $20 rebate on tickets. That's what you got to do. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter promo code CRAB. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code CRAB today.
Do it.
Do it. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to bring in our guest this week, fellow ATC member in the podcast community, got a great history. You know what I mean? He's got a great history. Oh, interesting guy. So please welcome for the first time on the Crab Feast, Mr. Chris Mancini. Welcome to the Crab Feast.
Welcome to the Crab Feast.
Woo! Great to be here, guys. First time.
Comedy film nerd.
Long-time listener.
Complete,
first time guest.
Yeah, that's right. You now complete the comedy film nerd.
Awesome.
Tour.
What's your favorite episode? I'm just
a guy
teasing.
Being struck
teasing.
By lightning last week.
The one I was listening to on the way over.
That's a great story.
God, don't you wish you were struck by lightning?
You know what? I was hoping one of you guys would make him say Shazam.
I don't. The closest I've been one time, I may have said this before, but I was redoing a phone jack in the apartment, and I didn't have wire, you know, strippers.
Yeah.
And I'd done it a million times before, put it in my teeth and slide that vinyl off. And man, I had the copper too long and it just ticked my tongue and it went boom in my, like a black cat, you know,
shut
those firecrackers
up.
Went off in my mouth and I was like, am I okay? Am I okay? They're like, yeah, you look all
look
right.
Look at my tongue. Is there a hole in it?
Is it black? And it was. I had black on my tongue. Like it fucking bam. And I was like, nah, never again. I'm called. Yeah. Fuck that.
So, I mean, that's not close to getting hit by lightning.
What I'm saying
you
is...
You got shocked.
That's right.
Right.
It's not.
No.
But being shocked, I don't ever want to be fucked. You said, don't you wish you were struck
you
by lightning.
Yes. Fuck. But that's like...
Literally.
Yeah, you got a taste. Yeah.
This is like... You're like meeting a guy that got shot one time. Like, oh, dude, I almost got shot too. Like, what happened? Like, I had a heart attack. Like, it's pretty close. Pretty close to the same thing.
I don't know. I'm in shock is shock, you know?
Yeah, but shock. Lightning. I'm saying, you know.
I'm saying that little bit, that little touch taste I had was enough to not be struck.
That was like an electricity warning shot.
Yeah, it sure as fuck was.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Well, thank you very much for being here. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody whatever you'd like them to know about Chris Mancini?
Absolutely. I've been a writer, a filmmaker, and a comedian. I've been doing the Comedy Film Nerds podcast with Graham Elwood for many years, and we also help run the LA Podcast Festival, and we've got a documentary coming out, Earbuds, the podcasting documentary. But the thing I'm working on now...
That wasn't last year that came out? Or was
no.
it just you guys last year, right?
We had a preview screening the festival last year, and then we hit some delays in
delays
post-production.
In film?
Isn't that weird? Especially in indie film?
Especially in post-production.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're on a very strict, limited budget, it's so weird that the way things slow down when you don't have $100,000 to pay everyone in post-production, where there are 100 people that you all of a sudden need to pay. So the thing I'm working on right now is a graphic novel. It's on Kickstarter right now called Long Ago and Far Away. And one of the things that always fascinated me was like, you know, as a kid, you would read books about Narnia and Oz, and the kids would always go into that world, fight the witch, and then come back to our world. Well, I always thought, well, what happens to those kids when they get older? What if now that they're 30, they run a comic book store and they're assholes, and now they have to go back into that world? And now they're like hitting on the witch queen and they're like making shit worse instead of like actually helping out and saving the world. So it was kind of that weird one that like that's I have to make this. It was, you know, a screenplay was in development in animation houses, but it never got to the finish line. So I'm like, so I'm kickstarting it.
Cool,
so
man.
I was really excited to get it going. And then as I'm writing it, I was thinking all writing is autobiographical at some point as you're writing. And the theme started to emerge of like, as we're kids, we have this sense of childhood wonder, like about how we feel about the world, and then we become jaded adults. What happens to us, you know, when that happens? How do we regain kind of that childhood wonder, which is a part of us as we grow up as adults? So this is also the story of kind of regaining that after you've lost it to cynicism and movies like Batman versus Superman, which gets you just so fucking angry.
I've seen the preview for that movie. I don't know anything about it, but all I keep thinking is like, why are they fighting?
Oh my God.
That's the only question I have.
I knew it was coming so much. It was actually, if you know anything about writing comic books, there's preview pages on the Kickstarter page. I put a Zack Snyder joke in there months ago because I knew it was coming.
Wow.
I knew you predicted the joke? I knew it was going to be shitty.
He also predicted 9/11. Yes. So, a lot of things, Mancini.
Two for two.
Wait a minute. So are you doing all the drawings as well?
No. Hired an artist, Fernando Pinto from Chile, and he's amazing.
Let me tell you something right now. We're big fans.
Fernando, get your ass out of here, man.
Oh, my God.
Bring your Pinto. Get out of that Pinto, man. Sketch yourself on in here, man.
So, he was amazing. It's weird finding a comic book artist. The good ones are unavailable. The bad ones are available, but flake. So it was really hard to find one. I finally found a good one. And you know how I knew he was a good one? Podcast fan.
Really?
He knew about, all of our podcasts, and he was a fan. So, oh, good. I don't have to explain any of the humor now.
Yeah.
This is perfect. So he came on board, and you can check out, like, there's preview pages. There's all the artwork is on there, and he's just amazing. He's really cool.
Look how podcasting's changing everything. You just found your artist.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
I love
it.
I found
Mark Waid, who's, like, a big comic book writer. He found the book, too. He, like, endorsed it. Like through podcasting, one of the people that work with him.
I saw that ad on Channel 4 the other day. I endorsed his message.
I saw it on markwade.com.
So that's been really cool. So I think you guys have a fair amount of listeners, I think, and a few of them are probably nerdy comic book fans. A few.
Well, not only that, like graphic novels are, I think, a little bit different than comic books, don't you think?
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. I think I've said that to someone one time. They're like, well, hold on a second. Graphic novel's a whole different ball. Because we were at Meltdown, and, you know, right. they used to give you a gift certificate.
Yeah.
Well, they used to give you a gift certificate. And I was like, oh, I'm not really into comic books. And someone goes, what about a graphic novel?
I'm like, exactly.
What's a graphic novel? And they're like, it's like one of these. I'm like, isn't that a comic book? They're like, dude.
This is going to take two hours. Sit down.
But my brother was big into comic books as a kid. Yeah. He was an artist, and he made his own comic book when he was in second grade. And like,
wow.
I ran into a kid out here that I went to, like, I grew up with till fifth grade, and then he moved. He was my brother's year till fifth grade.
Right.
So I knew him, but it had been 25 years or something when I ran into him. Mm-hmm. And so someone introduced us and said, oh, you guys are both Boston guys. I go, oh, what's your name, man? I'm Jay. And he goes, hey, I'm Andrew. And as soon as he said I'm Andrew, I go, this is Andy Elves. This is Andy Elves right here. And
Elves.
That was his name. Andy Elves.
Like more than one elf.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Whole family of elves, man. And I'm sitting there and I'm at this bar, and like, I had heard about this kid that was from Boston that people like at this other bar, like, you should meet this kid. So we're sitting there and I realize right away who he is, right? And I go, so where are you from in Boston? He goes, well, I moved out of there in fifth grade, but I used to live, you know, just outside. I go, well, what town? He goes, Stoneham. I'm like, oh, yeah? Like, what street? And he goes, oh, you know Stoneham? I'm like, yeah, I know it a little bit. And he goes, I grew up on Waterhouse Road. I go, like, what, over there with, like, Jeff Folcon and Adam Araska? He goes, what? How do you know that? I go, dude, I'm Jay Lawson. My brother's Adam Lawson. He goes, dude, Wonkies. And I go, what? And he goes, your brother used to draw Wonkies and make comic books Wonkies. And he went over, grabbed a piece of paper, and drew a Wonky.
Because like the character?
My brother created these guys called Wonkies and then wrote, like, I'm not kidding, like 30 comic books.
Wow,
like
cool.
Wonkies. I mean, my brother's still, he's an artist. That's what he does for work.
Uh-huh.
But like, he was into comic books. I remember he used to have his comic books and I'd be like, what's this one? It was some bear that used to kick people's ass. I can't remember.
Cool.
But I never got into it, but I always watched my brother, like, in my house, it was like, Adam's the artist.
Right.
You know what I mean? At least that's the way I saw it. Like, Jay plays sports, Adam's the artist.
Right.
But like, every Saturday morning when he get up at 6 a.m. to paint with that guy on Saturday mornings, I'd get
Bob Ross?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'd get up and I'd just lay on the couch and watch my brother paint. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is cool, you know? But anyway, so I don't know a lot about comic books, but just through watching my brother and stuff, it's such a cool way to tell stories, you know?
It's really cool. And it's something that is, like, as far as like converting it from like a screenplay or whatever, you realize that It's a $200 million film, but in a comic book, you know, you're basically giving the storyboards and creating this whole entire world on some pages for a fraction of the cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I like about it? Two things real quick. One, you have, there's no limits. There's no rules.
Exactly.
Like animation, there's no rules. You want to make somebody fall through the floor into the ground? Go ahead.
Right.
And the other thing I like about comic books, I tried doing this series called Still Life Life, where I would tell, like, make videos, but there were still photos voiced over, you know?
Right.
And the thing about a comic book is similar in that way. Like, in a movie, you can take your eyes off, you don't have to watch it, but in a comic book, you have to look at every detail, and as you're reading it, you have to watch, you know? Like, you really absorb it, which is a different way to experience than watching, like, an animated movie.
Now, did you guys, like, read comic books as kids? Did you, like, grow up on them
Did
at
you
all?
Not miss that whole thing I just told you? No, did you miss anything I just said?
No.
Pinto!
I meant, like, Spider-Man, like, the...
I didn't read... Did you?
I would say I checked in on them. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Every now and then I would read one.
Like on the NASDAQ?
I was more into baseball cards than going to get a comic book, you know? But every now and then I would, you know... that's exactly what I would get, like an Archie or... Right. I ended up getting into Mad Magazine and things like that had elements of that, but I was never a comic book nerd.
Right, right. So I,
but I really did appreciate the back of the Mad Magazine cover that you could
you
fold.
You get the fold in, yeah.
That's another
great
picture. Yeah,
those were the
touch.
two famous things was the Mad fold in, and then every comic book had this ad of like all these soldiers you could buy for like $2, you know, in this. But you know, I don't know anyone who ever ordered them or got them.
Gotcha,
like the bag of green plastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in addition to a comic book, you've actually done quite a bit. You wrote a movie called Asylum.
I did.
Why don't you tell us about
that? Technically, I did. Yes. Now, I do write horror movies, too, and this was like a straight horror movie. It wasn't a comedy. There was no comedy in it. It was a straight horror movie about a SWAT team who investigated demonic possession in an insane asylum. So
sounds
straight out horror.
Great pitch.
B movie, kind of like an action. It was like an Aliens, but with, you know, demonic possessed
aliens
people
meets
and monsters.
One
yeah.
over the flew over the cuckoo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great.
I was talking to another dad, you know, after a play date. You know, he's a casting director, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I work with a low budget horror company, and I'll send a script over." I'm like, "Great, okay." Thinking nothing will ever come of this. It's Hollywood, but it's very nice of him to try. So he sent the script over to After Dark Films, and a few weeks later,
not like it already.
They bought it, and they brought me in for a couple meetings, and they bought it. I'm like, oh, this never happens.
You're like,
this
Jesus actually, Christ, I'm gonna have to watch this kid's kids. This guy's like, kids for
like,
weeks.
This is, you know, I have all these agents and managers, and I sell a script on a play date.
Of course, right?
Right. So I wanted to direct this movie, and so I did this entire presentation, storyboards, all this stuff, and how I would direct it, how the tone of it would be like an action
session. After the sale. So you sold the script, and then you
pitched. Okay. And then I pitched to direct it because they wouldn't guarantee me directing for the sale, but they said they would consider it. I said, well, that's the best I'm going to do. So I went in, and they really liked the presentation. They said I had a pretty good chance. It's between me and a couple other guys. Okay, fine. I get a call that said, yeah, we're moving the whole production to Bulgaria and we're hiring a Bulgarian director. Okay, fine. So I still got the script.
I mean, that sounds like a baller move, doesn't it? That sounds something like...
What was in Bulgaria? Location? What was it about Bulgaria?
Some shady tax credit, something where,
that's,
you know,
yeah.
$1 million becomes $500 million dollars or whatever, something ridiculous. So I'm like, all
murder's legal. So the kill scenes are authentic.
Yeah, yeah. So it's okay. So like, I don't. It's snuff film. It
People
doesn't
really
matter. They've already paid. So okay. So I don't hear anything for a very long time.
So you did
time.
Get you had your check.
I got my check. I got paid. I got paid for the script. I was like, all right. Well, let's see. You know, at least like I'm getting a feature film made. It's a you know, in the horror genre. What could possibly go wrong? So I don't hear from him for a while. Then like a year later, I get a call from the production company. Hey, could you come in? I was like, why do you need
to
come in? A year later. And I'm like, okay, I'll come in.
And you had heard nothing.
I heard nothing.
They didn't update you on how it was going in Bulgaria?
No, nothing. No, absolutely nothing. And the one thing I did get to see is they sent a trailer. And the trailer is actually, it's on YouTube right now. And I'm like, well, it's not what I would have done, but it's okay. It's like a decent... horror, you know, low budget horror movie trailer. I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking, I wonder what they want to meet with me about. So I'm about to go to the meeting. They confirm the meeting again. I'm about to leave the house. They confirm the meeting a third time. So that only happens when something is horribly wrong or someone has a contract out on your life and wants to make sure that you're going to be there when they meet you there so they can collect the bounty. So I go halfway to the meeting. They call me again and go, can we just meet at the bar down the road? We don't really want to meet it in the office. So I'm like, all right. So now I know clearly something has happened. Yeah. So I get to the bar. They start buying me drinks. And they say to me, the producer that took your script to Bulgaria went rogue, threw your script away, and shot their own movie. And now we have nothing to deliver to Lionsgate.
Oh wow. My God.
And went, can you fix it for us?
Wait a minute. So he just made a whole other movie?
Made a whole other movie. But the best thing is he kept all the character names. So there's
how unoriginal is this guy?
There's American character names all being cast by bald Bulgarian guys with thick accents.
My God. So are you saying
Eric?
That
yeah, Tanner, you know.
Tanner.
Like all SWAT team names. And
so he takes your script, throws it away, does his own thing.
Right.
But does that mean then that your story, minus the character names, is still intact and you can take that script again and make this fix it for them? Or did he kind of take your story also?
No, the story literally was completely gone. Everything was gone. Everything except the character names. There was not one page of my script that ended up on screen. And
not one page. But the trailer had some of the elements of your story.
It did. Okay. And I found out why, because After Dark, after they got all the rushes, they're the ones that cut the trailer together. They didn't. They tried to piece it together.
Oh, my God.
And they put their own special effects in and stuff.
Oh, so and that went just to you?
That went just to me. And YouTube. Just me and YouTube.
Right.
They put special effects in the trailer?
Just in the trailer. None of that actually ended up in the movie.
How much money did they put in that trailer?
Yeah. The trailer had more money than the film. So... And the film was unfinished. So there's stuff like scene missing, like a Trent Reznor video.
Yeah.
There's like stock footage. There's guys that are – they're
stock footage.
Yeah. But then they wanted to pull that out because they didn't want to pay for that. So,
Jesus
and then there's guys that are supposed to be possessed, so they have white contact lenses. But they ran out of contact lenses, so everyone only has one in each eye.
You know what? Hey, that's creative.
That's creative.
Give each guy one, man.
It's still weird if they just each have one.
And
weirder. I haven't seen that.
And it stars Stephen Rea from The Crying Game.
Really?
Yeah, he's actually in the movie.
He's Bulgarian.
Yeah, he's Bulgarian. He's the one that doesn't have the giant Bulgarian accent. So they
how
go
many
to
white
me,
eyes did he end up with?
He's the lead, man.
Yeah, he's the lead. He doesn't have to do context. But they asked me, I said, can you fix it? I said, well, we think it came out so bad, we want you to make it a comedy. I said, I don't even know if I can do that.
So what are they saying? Like, from the footage they
from
want
the
you to
footage,
fix it?
They want me to change
not
it
just
into
rewrite
a
script.
Not just rewrite. No, there was like literally it was a mess. So I
got
took it
anxiety
home.
Anxiety trying to even think
me
about it.
Me too.
Oh, my gosh. I took it home. I watched the footage. I almost threw up. I was really close to throwing up. Thinking like, you know, you just took $1.4 million and threw it down a Bulgarian well is pretty much what they did. So I said, look, there's only one way I can fix this movie. And that is if I shoot some comedy wraparounds behind the scenes at a low budget horror production company and show how they fuck up a movie from start to finish.
Oh, that's good. Like a mockumentary type thing.
And then and then there's two editors watching the rest of this footage and they're doing Mystery Science Theater on the shitty footage. So I said, that's the only way I can fix this. And I was very surprised when they went, okay. It sounds
shut cool. up. And how much did they throw
we'll
at
let
that?
Do that? They didn't want to pay me to fix it. That was the
no.
Great
but
thing.
What were they going to give you for a budget to
yeah,
do that?
It was like they wouldn't tell me, but I think it was about $10,000. So it was very
Ooh,
low.
Still,
it was very low. It
that's
was about
incredibly low.
It was incredibly low. So and then I said, well, you know, I'll get some comedians in L.A. Well, you know, we can make it kind of funny. And they're like, no, we want to shoot it in Baton Rouge. So what do you mean?
You got a thing for bees. You got a thing for bees.
Again, you know, weird tax credits and blah, 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 blah. So I...
$10,000 turns into $12,000.
Yeah, and this is... and then this is... Yeah, exactly. With the
craft services
tax,
for a day.
Credits. So their idea was that comedy is interchangeable. I'm like, well, we'll just get an improv troupe from Baton Rouge to do everything. And then
this
I was
just like every and then, bad idea.
Exactly.
Like,
it's like
another
wow.
grenade
like,
in the room.
I'm like, you guys don't stop. You're yeah. making it. You're making it even harder every single step of the way. So finally, they said, but you know, we really don't have the money to pay you. And I'm like, all right, here's the deal. I want it fixed, and if you're going to let me do this, I can at least. I'm writing these scenes, I'm directing it, I'm putting it together, you're giving me control of this. And they said, okay, and they're going to give me the rights to my original script back and let me keep the money.
Okay,
so I said, okay, fine. So I called the one comedian I know in Jody Borello down in New Orleans, and I said, can you help me out with this? And then she goes to me, you know, there's no one down here, right? I said, I know. There's no yeah. comedians down. I'm going to have to convince them to actually fly out some talent with me. So I managed to convince them to get Mike Schmidt, the comedian. He
from
came
third
down.
Baseman from
yeah.
Philly?
Yep.
I know Mike Schmidt.
yeah. Home Run King? Yeah. from 40-Year-Old Boy podcast. And I called my buddy Dean Haglin from The X-Files just to get some recommendations. And when I told him the story, he's like, well, I'm free. I'll come down and do it with you.
Nice.
Like, oh, very cool. All right. So I got Dean Haglin, my buddy Mike Schmidt, and then I went down. They didn't have enough to cast any more people. I'm in a scene, so I had to do a scene. And then they didn't want to pay for Dean. You know, Dean Haglund's a professional actor. Perhaps yeah. you've heard of him.
Yeah.
They didn't want to pay for his hotel room. So I had to give up my rental car so he could have a hotel room.
My God.
So we start shooting these scenes. And when you go on down as a director, especially to like a crew or a new place, you immediately get stink eye from the crew. Like, who's this guy coming in and mm-hmm. doing that? After the first scene, I had won the crew over. Like, you know what? This is pretty funny. And so then I was just getting stink eye from the producers, which is normal on a production. So we're shooting. And it was always the things like, I'm going to need 3 days and 2 cameras. And then it always goes down to, well, you have 1 camera in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. I was expecting that. So, but I went down. I had the scenes already plotted out and all the dialogue, everything planned. So I shot it. I banged it out. And Dean, he's such a professional, like, improviser. So he was making every scene, like, amazing. And the producers didn't understand what improv was.
Mm-hmm.
So behind my back, they told all the other actors that we love what Dean's doing. Don't bother what Chris says. Just say whatever you want in all the scenes.
Oh my God. They just thought anyone could do that?
Yeah. It's like, you know, professional actor for 20, 30 years. Yeah. And the rules of improv, especially in a scene, are, you know, you stay in character. You don't contradict something from another scene. You don't contradict another plot point, any of those things. And Dean makes it look effortless, but it's still clearly a skill to even the untrained eye.
Mm-hmm.
You could really tell that this is a professional working. So. Finally, it was done. I edited it together. I was like, you know what? This is the best it's going to be. But it could be a kind of a fun cult classic. And, you know, people know what they're getting into. It's like a Mystery Science Theater, fun horror comedy. And it was supposed to be rebranded as Death of a Horror Movie so people could get it and know what it was.
That's cool.
I didn't hear from the production company again for another 6 to 8 months.
What?
And,
seriously, that long?
They stopped returning my calls and emails. And then I find out from my fans email and say they found the movie. Lionsgate released it, never rebranded it, still called it Asylum, was marketing it as a horror movie. So it's getting all these shitty reviews on the internet for people, from basically horror fans being duped into watching this movie, which I can't blame them. Like, you're getting tricked. It's a bait and switch.
So you're... stuff that you shot down in Louisiana is in there.
It's in there, yeah. And it's surprising a lot of angry horror fans.
Wow. When did it come out?
It came out last year. So it's on it's on streaming, it's on demand. And
What's it got on Rotten Tomatoes?
So I don't know. I didn't check Rotten Tomatoes, but it's got... you know what's funny? It's still, no matter how bad the reviews are on IMDb and on Amazon, it's still got a higher rating than any of Kirk Cameron's films.
Well, there you go. There
even
you
go. Even, even the Lord is Light.
Yes.
Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen that one. But the it's a mix of reviews now because now that our fans are going to see it, it's the it's like getting some 5-star ones going. If you know the story behind this movie, it's hilarious.
Cool.
And then you've got the 1-star is like, I thought this was a horror movie. This is bullshit. Why are these the only review that I take offense to or exception with, I should say, is that the notion that if it wasn't turned into a comedy, it somehow would have been a serviceable horror movie. Oh, no. Let me assure you, there was not even enough footage to make a horror movie there.
Really?
And let me put it this way. If a company like After Dark Films thought this is unwatchable, it was unwatchable.
Yeah.
So there was literally nothing there to put together. And even like the editor had a good idea because they wanted to take all the stock footage out. He goes, you know, we could probably get it cheaper if we left the little bug in there that said stock footage in each section, which would have been really funny.
Yeah,
like you see
sure.
just a car driving yeah. up and it says stock footage in the middle. But yeah, so it's the only time I think the same studio has ruined the same movie twice. Like they took out half of Mike Schmidt's really funny jokes because they didn't get them. Mm-hmm. Like there's one scene, there's like a big boiler room and it's like towards the end of the movie and the Mike Schmidt makes a joke and is like, oh, is this the set of Metropolis? And then he waits for a second, then he goes, you know, Fritz Lang just turned over in his grave because I mentioned his film during this film.
That's tight.
Enough. Yeah, they took it out. I'm like, oh, yeah, our focus groups didn't get it. Focus groups? What are you talking about? You had a couple of dumb interns watch this, and they didn't get it. That's what happened. So somewhere out there, that there's a movie that exists that shouldn't, that has myself, Mike Schmidt, Dean Haglund, Stephen Rea, and from The Crying Game, and a bunch of bald Bulgarian actors pretending to be a SWAT team.
All cuts and gun.
All together in one glorious mess of a
Asylum.
Film.
Asylum.
Yeah.
It sounds like what you... That it could have been a cult yeah. classic.
It could have been. If they know? Just would have followed the plan I set out, just this could have been like a fun kind of, you know, horror comedy. You know what happened. You got the story. And no one's been duped into seeing it. You knew what you were getting into. And so it is... You know, you can't, you wonder like what that conversation was. No, it's better that we just trick people. And then that's how we'll make the most
Dupe
money.
Them in.
Yeah. Like, no, it really isn't.
Wow.
So
that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that. Like, I don't know if we've talked about it on here, but, you know, we all have friends that have sold an idea or a show that they like worked their life at to get.
Yeah.
And then the deal is, yeah, okay, but there's no guarantee that you're going to be in it. And they're right. like, yeah, it's called the Jay Larson show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But like people don't get it. Like, you know, as a writer and director, just because you are a director doesn't mean they're going to let you direct. And if you're a writer, actor, creator, doesn't mean you're going to get to be in it. And people forget that. And then you can just see something that you just clearly slip away.
You don't always get final cut. That's for sure. Like I remember that scene in Barton Fink. Remember that movie when Barton Fink's a screenwriter and the executives yelling at him. It's like, you think you're the only one who could give me that Barton Fink feeling? Just because you are Barton Fink, I thought you might have it in spades.
Oh, my God. That's like a genre movie, isn't it? Like 50s or something?
I think it was, it was one of the Coen brothers with, John Goodman is so good in that movie. He's like a Nazi. He's
I
so
love good. Goodman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the man. So you've been a writer for a while then.
I have.
You said you were hired to write on a soap opera.
I was hired to write on a soap opera and
Which one, yeah.
Port Charles, the spinoff of General Hospital.
Port Charles. I think I remember Port Charles.
Yeah, sounds nice. Were you living in New York?
No, it was shot here in LA. Okay. And I was temping on the lot. It was one of my temp jobs. I was doing computer support. And I was fixing the head writer's computer, and I said, you looking for writers? And they're like, we're always looking for writers, so can you submit
We burn them out.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a turnover. So I submitted a Grace Under Fire spec.
For a soap?
Yeah. And they liked it, and
Grace
they put me
was
on.
Was that Brett Butler?
That was Brett Butler, yeah.
Nice.
It was many years ago.
Cool.
So they put me on trial, so I started writing, but I was still keeping my temp job as doing tech support. So that was going on for like about a month or two, and then an executive at ABC figured it out and sent my boss an email going, he's writing on the show and we have him in the computer department. Why are we paying him twice? So
Wow, you do double duty.
Yeah, good for you. Because you should be if I'm doing two jobs. Yeah. That's fucking why.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm doing two fucking jobs.
You know, I was sitting in my computer office, you know, writing the script.
Right? Yeah.
And occasionally I would go out and fix someone's computer. But so I was working on the show. Then they hired me full time.
Crap! My caps lock is stuck.
But he's like someone who's writing. He's like,
you took my baby, you son of a bitch. I don't even know your kids.
Yeah, it was like, you know. Oh, and it was great storylines like that. It was like, you know, serial killer is on the run.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, if you escape from prison, if you're a serial killer, where would you go? You would go back to Port Charles. Of course you would.
Yeah.
Because we're not building any more sets.
No.
Yeah.
You know, my whole idea of like romance and love came from watching soaps with my Nana. Every day was Days of Our Lives and Santa Barbara. I fell in love with the city of Santa Barbara off that. I just thought that's what people did. You stayed home from work and you had sex with your wife. You know what I mean?
Santa
that's
Barbara like, was like a hugely popular one.
Yeah, that's, it was really popular.
Dude, so it was Days, bro.
Yeah, yeah, it was indeed.
I think it's still on.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple that are still, they've survived the crunch. So
we used to live in an apartment complex where my brother and I, we were the only, I'm telling you, we were the only white people on that floor. And every day. Since I worked at night, I'd be home during the day and I'd see all the black girls talking, like the ladies, not girls. They were older, single moms, moms, whatever. And it was always, they called them their stories. Like, I'm going to watch my stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm about to my watch my stories.
Yep. And I had to ask one of the girls one time, like, what do you mean? She's like, soaps. I was like, oh, your story. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know.
My nana would be like, let me watch my story.
There's a script. There's a script every day had to be written, every single day.
And those actors, man, they got to, there's no prep time. You get your sides you go out there and you shoot.
There's also no time to fix anything either.
Yeah.
There's really no time to really fix
anything. Weren't they doing a live one for a little while or something?
There was like, it would be like a stunt kind of thing. Yeah. They're like, oh, this one's live. And but mainly it was a factory churning out. So they hired me full time. And I was just a dialogue
writer. Did they cut you from the computer?
They did cut me from the computer job. Yeah. They're like, all right, damn. Now I'm back to only one salary. So I'm writing, and I'm just a dialogue writer. So what they would do is they would give me the breakdown of like the story for each episode, and then I would just write the dialogue. So I would do that for a while. And then, you know, what happens in all shows, and one of the things that the head writer said is when she hired me, she said, look, your writing has a really distinct voice, which, you know, you think as a writer, you want to hear that. That's a compliment. Like, and she said, I want to make sure that your writing comes through where I don't even want to look at the title page. I want to read the script and know that you're the one that wrote it.
And she's like, have you seen Asylum?
Yes.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Little did I know what was held in store for me. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. So I started putting some jokes in. I made them a little funnier, and I tried to lighten it up a little bit. And then I would watch like the soap actors destroy and ruin all the timing on every punchline because they're not trained comedian or comedic actors. They're just trained to, you know, repeat lines over and over. And I found out one interesting thing about soap opera acting. When you watch an actor that's not very good on a soap opera, but if you watch them over a period of time, they suddenly become amazing because it's not that they've gotten any better. You've gotten so used to them.
Is that what it is?
That I'm like, okay, you know what? Yeah, it's pretty good. So as what happens with a lot of shows is, you know, the executive producers clean house. They fired the writer, the head writer that hired me. They fired the staff, and I got called into the executive producer's office. And she goes to me, your writing has a very distinct voice. We don't want to hear it.
She said that?
Yes.
Oh, my
we
God.
We want all the writing
like,
to sound
like, this is the best storyline all season right here.
You know, it seems like by your writing, you probably walked in the head writer's room, fixed the computer, and they just hired you.
We don't want to hear it. She said.
So they said, we want all the writing to sound the same. So I got fired for the same reason got hired.
You sure did.
That's great.
They didn't just tell you to stop doing that.
Nope.
They just were like, you're out of here.
That's done. Yeah, especially because the head writer hired you, so we're cleaning house. You're gone too.
And fix the printer on your way out, motherfucker.
Have you had other staff jobs after that?
So I've had for like freelance, and I did some a lot of like punch ups and some screenplay stuff, and a lot of stuff that, you know, we get an assignment and like, oh cool, this is great, this is gonna, and then never gets made. And you know, there's a joke with writing is, you know, I make a living writing for four people,
yeah,
you know, because you write, you're in development, and it just never goes anywhere. But I liked being staffed, especially on a show like that, because you weren't like fighting in a writer's room to get jokes out and stuff. You were just, you know, you went in once a week for a meeting, you did dialogue, and then like I would go on the road sometimes and just write the scripts from there. So, but it was, you know,
were you writing them over in Bulgaria?
Yeah, I was writing over in Bulgaria. Yeah. Well, there's no Wi-Fi in Bulgaria.
Yeah.
Oh, and
not
Bulgaria,
in that budget.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't let me say Bulgaria, so I had to change it to Bulvania in the script.
Are you serious?
Bulvania. Yeah, I'll be straight up with you.
Yeah.
Amazing country.
Yes.
I've been there a couple times.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm like, really? I can't say the actual. No, we'd like you to put in Bulvania. Oh, okay, all right.
It sounds like a disease, sir. You have Bulvania.
Yes.
That's what you had on your leg a couple months ago.
You have
Bulvania.
3 weeks to live. So that was, that was an amazing TV story.
Man, soaps.
About getting, it was one of those things, too, where I'll just bounce to another soap, and then they all started disappearing. Like, there aren't that many soaps left.
I was gonna say, are there any left now? Like, still like General Hospital's
still going.
Days
has to be still going. Days. Yeah, there's a couple left. But you know, yeah, you wonder too. Like, will those two ever really go away? Like, you think like now they're generational. Like, you know, kids watching with their parents now. Are they watching with their kids? It's like, I don't know. And it's I wonder if like they will be going on forever.
Could, you know,
we were talking to you before you got here professionally early, by the way, thank you very much, and we were talking about marriage and blah blah
yes.
blah, and you had a story about your honeymoon.
Yes.
That I wanted to hear about. Uh-huh. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us.
Where'd you get married?
We got married actually in Philadelphia, but we went to honeymoon in a bunch of different places
in Newark,
in
New Jersey. Yeah.
we summer in Newark and honeymoon in Albany.
Wait, are you from Philly?
Yeah, I'm from a suburb called Westchester. I went to school there. I went to Temple University. And then I came out to L.A. to seek my fortune. So, and
my brother-in-law.
Still doing it.
My brother-in-law still runs seeking. A prep school out there in, like out near Villanova.
Oh, really? What's the name of it?
Malvern Prep.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of Malvern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of prep schools out there. Isn't that the whole deal? Didn't Steve Simone tell us that? There's like prep school central out there?
There's a lot of prep schools. And they prep you for like Villanova. Which is just, it's a feeder school.
Just go right over here.
Yeah. You've clearly proven you can afford it. So now you're going to Villanova.
Now go right here.
I've always wanted to go to England. And I went to England. We went to like some really cool places. Went to London, obviously. And then we went to a place called Glastonbury, which was really cool, like a lot of like cool like myth and mystic sites kind of stuff.
It's out there near Balvania, right?
Yeah, it's out there near Balvania. Yeah, yeah.
There's that peninsula over there.
There's an underground railroad. Yeah. And
Balvania peninsula. Yeah.
So I went to Scotland and went to Inverness, where Loch Ness is, and you could kind of see, we wanted to go on Loch Ness, and you know, and we enjoy all like the legends and kind of the fun tourism of all that.
You got on a boat and stuff.
We got on a boat. We looked for the monster, didn't find it. But they were telling us that Inverness
one day that thing's just gonna come up and just fuck you.
Yeah,
you think there's a tour guy like port side, port side? Ah, you missed him. Sorry, guys.
I guarantee, because that's part of it. Then there's a Nessie Museum. It's fantastic. It's great. It's like it's all and not a shred of evidence anywhere. That's the best part. It's for tourists. It's great. So they did tell me though that the city we were staying in, Inverness, was one of the most haunted places on the planet. I was like, oh,
planet. Yes. That's a bold statement.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. And they said because of its violent history and past, it's literally haunted like everywhere. So I'm like, all right, I just put this in the back of my mind. And the last couple of days, I started getting a little sick. I got like a cold and I was having trouble sleeping. And we're in the hotel room in Inverness. It's like the middle of the night and the bed starts shaking. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, well,
what is
dude,
this?
Nice honeymoon,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah. And
give us an example of how violently it was. Was it violently shaking? What kind of shaking?
It was like a train was going by, like a vibration, and then it would stop. So, and then my wife was asleep; it didn't wake her up. And then I noticed out in the hallway, I started hearing footsteps, and every time the footsteps would get near our door, Now, the bed would shake again.
Get the fuck out of here.
Come on, yeah, dude.
Yeah. Is it like a boot or is it like a heel? Is it a man or a woman?
It sounded like a boot.
Yeah.
It
was definitely it's always a boot. Yeah. They don't ever wear chucks or something.
It's England.
It's a boot.
Coming with a boot.
Yeah. The only one who wears shoes in England is Doctor Who. So
what was the like from what time period was the violency? Like when was it? Like before Christ? I mean, the 1200s? What are we talking?
I think it was like literally this is kind of like that you know, wars from
the day they said, this is Scotland.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the day.
Gotcha. Like literally like every from Middle Ages on.
Okay.
Like constant things. So, and then the footsteps would get farther away and then the vibrating in the bed would subside. So then the footsteps would come back towards the room and then the bed would shake again.
So it happened over and over?
Happened over and over.
How many times?
It was probably about 3 or 4 times until I
and your wife's asleep.
And she's asleep. But then that last time it woke her up.
Yeah.
She was like, why is the bed vibrating? And then I was so out of it.
Dropping quarters.
Cold medicine. Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about it. This is our honeymoon. I got plenty of quarters.
Go back to sleep. Yeah.
So I was so out of it with like cold medicine and feeling so shitty that in my head, the first thought in my head was, man, I wish that ghost would go away so I could get some sleep.
Oh my God.
So then I was like, you know what? I turned the light on and then everything fucking stopped. Like I turned the light on and then everything stopped. The footsteps stopped. The bed stopped shaking. And then it was done. So the next day we woke up and went to the front desk and I asked the clerk, I said, is this hotel haunted? And the clerk goes, no, this hotel isn't haunted.
Well, you're here for 3 more nights,
right? Yeah, this hotel isn't haunted. And then he goes, well, what room were you in? I said, why would you ask me what room I was in if you just said it wasn't
room,
haunted?
But not the whole hotel. That's what.
But, you know, the luxury suite is not haunted at all.
It's like, is that what room was I in? So
we're in the honeymoon suite, man.
So clearly the hotel was on it, and then it did let slip that not only, you know, you have this violent past of this town, they said, yeah, a workman died a couple years ago here. He, like, fell off a ladder. So,
I like that it's, like, yeah, Bob that fell off the ladder, not somebody from, like, you know, 1786.
Executioner, yeah.
So, but that was, yeah, that was, I really thought that was, like, a real ghost story. Like, that was the first and only one I've ever had.
Did it just happen that one night?
That was it, yeah. We were only in the hotel for 2 nights, and it just happened that one night.
Was that the last night?
That was the last night, yeah.
See, I would have been out of there if it was the night before. I left Big Bear because of that shit in the middle of the night.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, after a show, I was like, we're not sleeping here. We're out.
Yeah. Did you get like a taste of something?
I had the night before, I had this, people email me like, you had sleep paralysis, but I had a weight lay on me and I couldn't move. I couldn't yell to get over there. I'm wide awake. I'm fully aware of what's going on. And then when I tell the lady who owns the show home at the show, because they put you up in this house across the street from the theater.
Right.
That's Cheryl.
They said that's Ralph. And I was like, what? And it was a guy that had been killed up on the floor above. And that's what they told me who it was. And I was like, pfft. And then when I got back, Donna said, Stella won't stop crying. She's never like this. She's crying. And then I tell her that story. And then we're like, we're getting out of here.
Oh,
bounce.
My God.
See you later. We're not sleeping there again.
Yeah. You think at what point is it worth, as comedians and a career, I'm like, you know what? Do I have to stay in the haunted condo?
Yeah, right.
Or can I drive home?
I'm just a 2 hour ride.
Yeah.
Not even that late at night.
I'm
down
an
the
adult.
Mountain.
I don't have to stay here.
I mean, I wonder if anyone just sits in like, you little bitch, get the fuck off me. And like,
Donna was saying, told me the next day, she was quietly going, show me something. That's what she said she did. And I was like, it's your fucking fault that
the
motherfucker
night before?
Laid on me. Yeah. While she was falling asleep.
She taunted the ghost?
Yeah. That's what she told me when we were driving back. She's I kept saying, show me something.
I'm like, but not on me.
Do it on him.
Yeah. Kill him. You might want to ask your wife if she pulled that shit in London.
Exactly. Were you whispering anything when we went to bed?
And then, you know, then of course she starts telling all the stories from other people. And there's a book they keep there that you go write your story in. So there's a log and a journal of these old stories.
But I'm guessing that log is presented to you after your stay.
Yeah, they don't tell you going in. It has to happen to you because they want you to come back. Right. She's like, anytime you want to come up, we'll give it to you for free. I was like, I don't want to come back. She told me a story about one night she went into the library where she obviously – doesn't keep candles and light them for, you know,
obvious
common
reasons,
sense reasons. Right? And she said she woke up one morning and she smelled candles, or in the middle of the night she smelled candles, and she went downstairs and she unlocked the library that she always locks.
Right.
When she went in, there were candles in there and they had burned all the way down.
Oh, man.
And she's the only one in the house.
Wow.
And she was like, fuck. And I was like, ooh, give me
I didn't take the gig. Because Rye, they asked, like, oh, do you know anyone else? Rye recommended me, and the guy hit me up, and I'm like, I'm going to be straight up with you, man. I cannot take that.
He talked shit to me, too. Like, it didn't happen to you, blah, blah, blah. Then later, he's like,
I'm just not going up there solo. No. There's no way.
It's not worth it. It is not worth it. It was, the show was worth it. I mean, yeah. I should have just gone up, done the show, and gone back. But, I mean, really, no. We had a nice day and everything up Big Bear. The lake's beautiful.
You got to you got to route it fall. With, like, ghost hunters or something where they can actually come and stay with you. You know, something, you know, you bring like a paranormal crew up with you.
And make it a thing.
Yeah.
I'll be standing behind a lot of people, though. I'll be in the way in the back, in the middle, actually. I wouldn't be in the back for fear of being picked off easily.
Like Secret Service ghost guards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Fuck that. But then you ran into some trouble on
we
the way
did.
Back.
On the way back at customs. And it's interesting to see it escalate so quickly because my wife is so. She's so nice and innocent, and she didn't realize how much she was pissing off the customs guy. And I was like, oh, please just stop talking. So what happened was we're getting our bags.
First she's pissing off the ghost.
Stop being so nice. What's wrong with you?
We're going to fill it. Well, of course you are. Step over here.
So we get out of the we get our bags and stuff, and then the customs agents have these drug sniffing dogs. And what they do is they walk around the bags and all this stuff, and then they sniff. So the dog sniffs our bag.
That is their job.
This tiny little dog turns around to the custom agent, and just looks like it's this one. You know, it's this one, but it's a tiny dog. It's
so they're not using the German shepherds.
No,
like we
no,
do
this
over
was
here?
Like this was like a
Shih Tzu or something.
Yeah, it was a tiny dog.
Pomeranian out
there. And the customer agent goes, all right, what do you got in your bag? And it's like, well, no, nothing, just clothes and stuff. And and she goes, do you have any fruit, nuts, or, you have any
thing,
fruit,
custom,
nuts? Or, yeah, right. Yeah, or like coffee.
Sunflower seeds, never yeah. Right here.
And so my wife goes, no, we don't. We just have, we have M&Ms. And the custom agent gets right in her face.
Peanut M&Ms?
And goes, is this... He goes, M&M's is like, and he actually gets in her face and goes, is that a fruit or a nut or a vegetable? And now she gets mad. She's like, but still in a nice way, she's like, no, but that's probably what your dog is sniffing.
Oh,
and then
that's an officer of the law.
And that's exactly what happened. Then the officer in his head heard,
your partner's a fucking asshole.
Fuck you, pig. Yeah, right. I'm challenging you and your Olympic bullshit moron. So,
this is a Bobby?
Yeah. No, this isn't Philly.
Oh, this is,
this is coming back.
Coming back in. Okay. Yeah. Not leaving England.
No, this
America.
Is coming back in customs. So,
even
then,
better.
Of course, everything gets searched, and then there's nothing there. And then we get back, and then we're walking out. And then my wife looks at me and goes, you know, they wear peanut M&Ms.
Shut up.
That little dog smelled peanuts.
Yeah.
That little dog got written up for a false accusation.
Exactly. I haven't seen small dogs again doing it in customs.
I've only just seen German Shepherds.
Yeah, that's all you see now. So I don't know, maybe this was a pilot small dog program that didn't quite work.
I came back from Seattle this summer, and actually, I do smoke marijuana, and it's clearly legal there statewide. So I appreciated this, that what they did was – it was a Labrador, actually. They brought it through and sniffed everyone while we were all waiting in line.
Oh.
Their bags, their clothes, their whatever. I'm assuming because it's legal there, people were trying to get it out or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just went right through. But they didn't just come by you once. They zigzagged through with you. So it would come by you maybe three or four times. It would come by.
Just to
would,
make sure.
Right. And they're like, don't pet the – it's a lab. But they're like, don't fucking pet it. But, they're like, don't pet it.
Stoners like to pet dogs.
Yeah. But then we didn't have to take off our belt, our shoes, anything. We just went right through. And I was like, oh, man, they should do that everywhere. It was so fucking easy. We didn't have to undress or do all that bullshit.
But what if it was a
this
hemp
dog
belt?
Sniffed. He might just be looking up like this.
Yeah, but they're not always just doing that for weed.
No, I'm saying whatever reason it was, bombs, weed, whatever, I'm all for it.
It was easier to get through.
Yeah, we we walked because everyone's just going through here.
Sure, you weren't in TSA pre-check?
No, I'm never in pre-check. There's no one fucking going, crazy. Oh, I got to have my computer out of the fucking bag. Yeah, we got to rerun it. Oh, my belt's got to come off.
By the way, I'm old enough not to take my shoes.
Pay
for pre-check. It's worth it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes they just throw you in there just randomly. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They just randomly throw people through pre-check, which
is hilarious.
Stupid.
Because it's randomly, stupid. I'm randomly going to get you through quicker. That's how reversed the system
in
airports is.
It's the people like, which way do I go? Yeah. It should be like, how frequent you fly. It should all be like in a number system, like, oh, percentage-wise, oh, you flew 60,000 miles last year, you're not pre-checked, but boom, you go through.
Yeah, you can go in.
Crazy. Nate Bargatze just had a great bit on Fallon the other night about being in a small airport, so it didn't have like the x-ray. You just go through the thing, and he goes, this guy goes through, and the guy goes, the alarm goes off and goes, ah, I don't know what it could be. And the guy goes, well, you know, he goes, he looks at the guy and goes, you think it was my belt? And Nate goes, if you're on Family Feud and the question was, what would make a metal detector go off? The number one answer would be belt. Yeah, it's probably your belt.
But I'll just take your word for it. Go ahead, sir.
So you went to film school at Temple.
I did. Yeah, Temple University. A few years ago.
TU? Yeah. Did you apply anywhere else?
I didn't, no. I actually started as an engineering major. I was going to go to Drexel, and then my dad actually worked at a community college in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So since they didn't want to pay for the junior first 2 years of college, junior college, yeah. So I was like, well, you're going there and then transfer. I'm like, all right. So I was going to transfer to Drexel and be an engineer. And then after 2 years of college, I went, I don't want to be an engineer. You know what? I'm going to go into film. And that's when I went to film school in at Temple University. But it was old school film school where you would actually have to cut your film with a razor blade and a block and tape. And
they don't still do that in all film school?
They don't. Everything is digital. Now, every once in a while, they'll do that as like an exercise in futility. But there's no reason at all anyone should be doing that at all ever. But it wasn't even efficient because the razor blade was stronger than the block you would cut on. So the block would actually start to degrade and have like little grooves where the razor blade would get. So you couldn't even cut it properly. And then I remember like the big expensive system that the grad students got to use was the Steambeck in the other room that was like the reel-to-reel that would go around really fast. And this was way before digital editing. Although the biggest part of digital editing that we did was VHS to VHS.
Editing?
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah, that was like we would get VHS tapes and then we would edit them together for one, a big new VHS tape. And no matter how skilled you were at it, no one could ever adjust the tracking properly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see like all the stuff that, you know, we were taught and learned on is 100% completely obsolete.
Gone.
Yeah, it's everything's digital. Everything.
Isn't that how they edit Asylum? On the VHS?
Oh, I wish. It would have been easier.
Yeah, I had a professor, I was telling you, in college that was a radio guy. And, I mean, long gone was reel-to-reel editing, cutting just like that. But because he was a dinosaur, he made us go in on a fucking Saturday and cut. And you couldn't just... This was part of your grade. You couldn't just cut. It had to be a clean edit. And the same problem with the blocks and everything. Yeah. You couldn't have that. You couldn't have that little noise at all in there. Or anything couldn't be clipped. He would tell you to pull this together and this together. You had to go in there and slice and shit on a Saturday. And it took forever.
And then did you have to add like the reel-to-reel sound and try to sync that up too?
We didn't have to do that. This was just a straight edit.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we had the... after you did the blocks, we would have, quote, the sound synchronizer, that it would be another obsolete machine that then the reel-to-reel sound would go on. You could never get that right either. And you wonder, like, if this is how professional people are making movies, how is anything in sync ever? So, because they had Steambecks. So I graduated from film school and came out here.
So you knew at, like, what age that you wanted to get into film? Did you
at like 13, yeah.
And you wanted to write, or you wanted to direct, or you wanted to act?
I never wanted to act. I always just wanted to write and direct. In fact, I put out a short film compilation a couple years ago, and it had like my first movie that I made in that I, when I was 13 on. It was like a little stop motion animation.
Cool. With,
like, that I just used my toys and blob. And then the person I worked with there at 13, a childhood friend, became a sound designer later. So he went back and sound designed the entire thing like 30 years later.
Yeah. So, that's cool.
So it actually sounds good now. Because he added the soundtrack many, many years later. But it was it's cool. It's one of the things I love about filmmaking. I always love like
shit
like,
really slows in post,
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. 30 years, Jesus, for a 2 minute animation. Yeah. But I always love telling stories, and that was always been my first love. And I always think like that's the best part about stand up for me has always been just kind of the writing more than the performing or acting.
Sure.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I've been like, I have tons and tons and tons of old like stand up sets, and I've just been going through them because like I just want to put more content out, like of jokes that never like I did on TV. I'm like, let's get these jokes out. And I'm looking back to when like, I don't know, maybe I was like 6 or 7 years in or 8 years into comedy. I'm like, man, my writing was like so much better then. Like I wrote, I just don't write anymore. I just get up, I'm like, oh, I can talk about this. And you can just see comics that write and how much stronger they are because they wrote the jokes and then everything else comes afterwards. You know what I mean? Like you can just see the difference in comics when you see a guy get up there that's like, oh, look at that. That's clearly written and time's put into it, you know?
Right.
I also used to know a guy, I used to babysit this guy when I first moved out here, who was a VP at Warner Brothers in film. Like, he was
How old was he?
How old was he? He was like... 13, man, made the stop motion video for his kid. This guy was like baller. Like he was up there. He was doing big things. And he used to, he knew that I wrote. And he used to ask me, like, how's your writing? And I'm like, ah, it's all right. He goes, like, writers always work, man. You can't make anything without a writer. You know what I mean? Like, you can always get rid of, like, someone. You know what I mean? But you're always going to need the people to write things.
I think what he meant to say is the same 6 writers always work.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I saw a cool TED Talks today. I never watched, my buddy sent it, of the guy that wrote like Toy Story and Finding Nemo. Mm-hmm. And the whole TED Talk is about writing and like storytelling and stuff like that. Anyway, if you have a chance, go check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Baller. The guy is killer. And you were saying earlier about like, you said it like, I don't know, 40 minutes ago, how like, you always take something from your life. It comes out in your writing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he was making a point about that and told a story about when he was 4 years old that happened with his dad, and then showed a clip from Nemo when the dad finds Nemo's like just as a little egg when he lost them in the ocean. And it was like that was something that happened to him in his life. It was crazy.
Oh, it is crazy.
Yeah, it's cool.
So is that what inspired you to write your book? What's it called? Pacify Me?
Yeah. Yeah. That is literally autobiographical. That one, A Handbook for the Freaked Out New Dad. Yeah. I wrote it, and when my wife got pregnant, I was just freaking out. I was like, my life is over. I don't know. I want to have kids, but I don't really want them now, but I'm getting older. I have to have. And so I started like picking up books about being a dad, and I was like, well, this is crap. This doesn't help me. Oh, this is written for a woman, or it's written like it's a woman talking to a dad, where basically the advice to new dads on all these women, like how to expect your expecting books, is like, well, you just need to support the woman. That's all the advice for dads. And I was like, well, this is garbage. There's nothing here that's helping me or helping me get through this, or is from my perspective. So I wrote one, and I wrote the proposal, and I had a friend of mine, Stephanie Wilder Taylor, who was writing a bunch of mommy books. And she sent it to her editor at Simon & Schuster, and they bought it. So it came out in 2009.
Bulgaria in 2009.
Yeah, Bulgaria, yeah, I know.
Big year, oh no.
Bulgaria in 2009. Bulgaria first, it's a banner year. Now, I will say this is the one project, though, that I had control over, and I had a great experience, and I was like, wow. And I knew enough about Hollywood and how projects work that this may never happen again, you know. And I wrote it, and it's a mix of like getting over the fear of being a dad and then becoming loving being a parent, and also but acknowledging the fact that you're freaked out. Like the initial title of the book was My Life Is Over, and the publisher is like, that might be a little too negative. Women may not buy that for their husbands. So we changed it to Pacify Me. The first chapter is still called My Life is Over. So
nice. Good choice.
So it goes through that. And then I wanted to do also give like tips and helps, help parents, especially dads, on kind of getting through the process. And so it goes up pretty much from getting pregnant to the birth to the first year of life. And that's the book. And I've gotten some really great feedback on it. Like, people have emailed me and said, look, no one else was kind of talking about what I was going through, but your book helped me get through this. And then there are some people that are furious and like, how could you be so now? Could you talk about pregnancy and having a baby like this? That's awful. I'm glad my husband doesn't think this. I'm like, well, he kind of does. He just keeps his mouth shut.
Yeah.
You know,
he gave me a 5-star review.
Yeah. 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 So it was a really fun
thing.
He wrote
the
write.
Forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And chapter one.
Yeah. Yeah. We go out and he's told me an earful about you. So it was really a good experience because it was very cathartic for me to get everything out, but it was also great to hear, like, you know, as we joke around and as artists and stuff, but ultimately if we help somebody through a tough time, like, you know, you guys I'm sure get it all the time. The podcast helps people, and that's really rewarding when we hear stuff like that.
I agree. We have great fans and we do get it quite a bit, and I it feels good.
So that is out. So you can, it's on Kindle and Amazon.
Your kids are how old now?
They are 11 and 7. And then my daughter has discovered acting, and I've been trying to discourage it for
is
as much as I
can. Is she 11 or 7?
She's 11. She's the 11-year-old, but she's a singer, dancer, actor, and she's the lead in Grease. She's Sandy for the school play right
Sandy.
Now.
Sandy.
At 11.
Summer loving happened so fast.
So it's so funny because, like, as you guys know, how miserable the business can be. She was like, you know, I want to get an agent and go on. I'm like, no, you're too young. It's not what you think. It's a lot of rejection. Wait till you're older. And then, you know, another year went on. She kept bugging me. I'm like, oh, okay.
So she was hitting you up.
She was hitting me up at like 5.
Wow.
And I was like, let's wait. Because I also wanted to see, is this something she really wants to do? Or is this, because, you know, kids in LA, that's one of the things that they used to talk about, what candy they like. But kids in LA are like, oh, who's your agent? Well, you got an audition. This is in grade school. This happens
Yikes.
Now. It's insane.
God,
so
that's
so
gross,
finally,
actually.
I'm like, all right, so if you really want to do this, and she wanted to take acting classes, they have a real strong theatrical program actually in her grade school. So I set her up with 2 meetings with agents.
Kirk Cameron runs.
Yeah, Kirk Cameron, exactly. they both wanted her, so we signed with one agent, and I'm like, now
she
just
signed?
Remember, she's got signed across the board.
Wow.
For everything. God. Yeah. She's got a new book coming out called Pacified.
It's so hard to get the.
Yeah, I know. She got across
it's
the
so
board.
So hard to get.
And then I said, now look, you're going to go on auditions. You're not. It's going to be miserable. You're not going to get a lot of stuff. And then she booked an NBC promo.
Wow.
So I'm like, all right. Clearly, you want to do this. You seem to be fairly good at it. Then we'll continue and see how it
fucking
goes.
Fucking bitch. Like, just the resentment.
So
good for her.
Yeah, so she's doing well. That's what I talk to. You know, sometimes we have her on the podcast. We do like a spoiler ep for like a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. And then with Graham, her, and myself in the room, only one of us has representation across the board.
Oh, my God. Sorry, Dad, I can't do the podcast. Got a callback.
Yeah, she's got a Cheetos callback. So
Cheetos. That's amazing. Now, can I ask you this? If it's too personal, you don't have to tell me. Have you guys had the birds and the bees talk? Or is that, did your wife have that? Are you going to have that? Or has it been had?
That's a lot of questions you just asked me.
Well, pick one.
And I'm going to say, I don't know my wife's department.
Perfect.
So it's very possible it's been said, and I've made it very clear. I don't want to know when it happens, but just let me know and I can plan accordingly for the weekend.
For a new book.
Yeah. Weekend. I know. We have a son. The 7-year-old son is that I'll take care of him. It's like, we're going to have to split up. You know, you understand how the parts work better than I do. And I don't even know. Like, I remember we learned in like, it was middle school.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I think it starts earlier and earlier.
Well, it's way earlier now. Yeah, and you also didn't grow up in, I mean, well, you grew up outside of Philly, but LA and internet equals.
Forget it. Yeah. Equals. Like, I know, like, I think
internet before the
my daughter mentioned that like in fifth grade that like, you know, at towards the end of the year they'll get a kit. I'm not exactly sure what's going to be in it, but it's part of their educational process.
I'll say the period stuff starting again. Yeah, I remember fifth grade getting like a prep video. Yeah.
See, when I
and
hear
then sixth grades when we got the boys and girls were separated and you know, we all had to talk.
I like the word kit because it's just I'm thinking, oh, well, model airplane.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For you. Yeah.
There was this dude, Alan Carr. He's a British comic. Uh-huh. Not the guy that, like, there's a big, there's two of them, I'm pretty sure. I can't remember exactly. But I saw him one time. He's a gay guy. And he goes, you remember sex education class? Girls would go to one room, talk about their periods. Boys would go to another room, learn how to put a condom on. It was always very awkward waiting for Mr. Jenkins' dick to get hot. It's one of the best jokes I've ever heard. So you're going to have to go through it or your wife's going to.
Yeah.
We're all going to.
Yeah, I've got to go through it.
Yeah. Oof. I can see Rye doing it. I can see Rye.
I'm down.
Being,
I'm not
yeah, Rye's not
going
to be scared. She's going to be like, Dad, shut up. Like, listen, yeah, I'm telling like, you, listen
you
to me.
You need a Kotex?
Yeah.
Or Tampax?
Dad.
I tell you, look at your kids growing up, and you think about that, and you just hear in your head like tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming. You can't.
The
stop
only
it.
Thing that that gives me anxiety about that is the age being earlier than I want it to be in my head, because that's
yes.
just realistic and it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You're talking about probably about that now, 11, 12.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
That's
the
early.
Other thing too that we never used to deal with like. The constant barrage of devices and machines and all these things. It's like, well, who's texting you? It's, you know, what chat rooms are you in and all that stuff. You got to monitor everything now. There's too many screens to monitor anymore. So I just have to learn how to lock down everything.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. That's the truth.
You know, it's, you say you have to childproof the house. You got to kind of childproof the technology.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, until somebody at their school is like, oh, no, I know how to break that. They could figure out a workaround.
I remember Howard Stern laying it out really well. I mean, years ago, he was talking about those chat rooms, and he was, telling them just like there are predators in real life, they exist in there, too. And he was trying to monitor what rooms they couldn't be in. And it's almost impossible. There's always a workaround to something.
Well, I'm probably going to need the FBI to break into my daughter's phone.
Yeah.
So.
Apparently, Apple doesn't let that happen.
They got somebody who can do it. That's
Well, we're about that time here, Chris Mancini. Thank you very much.
Oh, this was great.
Coming on here. And will you please one more time promote and plug your Kickstarter and all that?
Absolutely. It goes to May 2nd. It's a graphic novel. It's going to be at least 140 pages. And it's called Long Ago and Far Away. You can just go to Kickstarter and type in Long Ago and Far Away. There's some great rewards. You can get the whole book. You can get it digitally. And there's like a real – if you go up high to like $5,000, if you want to go that high, it's kind of a give back tier where I talk to the artist. If you want to make your own comic book, we'll make 10 pages of it for you. I'll write it and he will actually illustrate, color it, letter it. So if you're thinking like, I want to kind of do this myself and I've got, I want to support this artist and then like, we'll support it right back. So we'll do it again. There's some cool comedy film nerds tiers where we'll go to a movie with you and we'll do a spoiler up with you afterwards. So talk. So it's Long Ago and Far Away. It's got until May 2nd. We could really use your help on it. The other thing I want to say is some people are like, well, I don't really have any money. $5 isn't going to make a difference. It really does. If you only have $5 to give, it still needs to get us there because it's a $28,000 goal. And as of when we're taping this, we're already over 10 grand, which is good.
Nice.
So we're almost halfway.
That's 28 grand in Bulgaria.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So that's like... That's like 10 million Gdanskis or whatever.
Don't even talk about how far that goes in Bulvania.
So, and we do ship to Bulvania, so you can still participate.
And cool. LA Podfest, what are the dates? We're excited to be a part of it.
That is, yeah. Happy to have you guys back. 23 to 25 at the Sofitel Hotel. It's going to be a really big year this year. We've got...
23 to 25, what month?
September. That's a surprise.
All right. You will never tell.
And we've got like Welcome to Night Vale, Criminal, Rooster Teeth, a lot of really big podcasts. And some of them, they're overlap with comedy, but some different type stuff too. So we want to really just kind of open it up and...
Cool.
Really to go a cool podcasting experience for the fans.
Great.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure to have you. someone come on and share such great stories, man.
Cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
As always, jlarsoncomedy.com, jlarsoncomedy on all social media.
RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on social media. We'll talk to y'all next Tuesday.